Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. Marketing strategies have evolved far beyond mere promotional tactics. They've become an art form of storytelling that shapes perceptions and influences behavior. With companies dedicating an average of 10.7% of their revenue to marketing budgets in 2023, the significance of crafting compelling narratives is more apparent than ever. To drive growth and foster meaningful connections, organizations must adopt a holistic approach to customer centricity, ensuring every facet of their marketing aligns with their customers' journey and aspirations. On this episode, we are joined by Eric Fulweiler, co-founder and CEO of Rival, to discuss rethinking marketing, not just as a tool for selling, but as a research and development function that continuously adapts to the ever-changing needs and desires of the audience. To support the show, visit chrishood.com/show, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform, follow us on social media, or you can email me directly, show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected.
Connecting. Access granted. It's the Chris Hood Digital Show, where global business and technology leaders meet to discuss strategy, innovation, and digital acceleration. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Your digital evolution starts now. Here's your host, Chris Hood.
Welcome to the show. Eric, would you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. I know we've been planning this for a while, so I'm excited that the day is actually here. My name is Eric Fulweiler. I'm co-founder and CEO of a business called Rival. We are a marketing strategy firm. I'm based here in London. Our team is about 20 people between London and New York, as you can tell from the accent. I'm not from this part of the world originally. I'm from the Boston area. I spent a long time in New York before moving over here. My background is marketing roles in growth stage startups. I spent a little bit of time in the media world at Forbes.com back in the day when .com was actually a separate business from the nice offices for the magazine people up the street. So that dates me a little bit. And I spent 10 years in the advertising agency world, which is the bulk of my career. At this point, 7 of those were working for a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk, who some people might have heard of. And if you have time to go down a very deep YouTube and Instagram rabbit hole and haven't heard of him, you're welcome, or I'm sorry, depending on how it goes for you. But that's a little bit about me.
Awesome. Great to have you. I'm going to really enjoy having this conversation. As you said, we've been talking back and forth for a few months now, and really glad that you could get onto the show. I want to really dive into one specific area of marketing. I mean, we could go on and on forever on all of the different facets of marketing, but the area that I think a lot of people struggle with is the go-to-market strategy. And where do they position their brand, their messaging, their product? How can we look at that to begin?
I mean, it's like where to start. It's really everything, right? And of course, you know, you're a hammer, everything's a nail. I'm a marketer, so I'm going to say it's everything. But really, well, let me take a step back for a second. So with the work that we do at Rival, we're a marketing strategy firm, and we really work across the full remit of the marketing function. So brand and product positioning, which is what we're going to talk about. And then I would say how you take that to market. So I know there's a bit of a distinction, and at the end of the day, it's all about how do you deliver the right thing to the right people at the right time, the right way, et cetera. But there's kind of those two buckets. And then we do a lot with customer data, MarTech, and kind of capability building within the marketing function. But when it comes to kind of brand and product positioning, so kind of what you're talking about, how do you position a business? We get put into the marketing and the brand box, but really it's about figuring out your fundamental approach to growth. So the process that we go through, we've kind of developed this methodology called building a brand operating system, because we think that that traditional concept or connotation of like a brand book, brand guidelines, it needs to be the same thing for everybody all the time, does not make sense in a world that is constantly changing. And oftentimes in businesses, you know, we do a lot of work with startups and scale-ups that are constantly changing. It needs to be dynamic. And so when it comes to going to market, first, you need to figure out how are you going to position your brand and business in a way that it's going to grow? And that will ultimately inform the advertising. And I think a lot of people think of advertising and marketing as the same thing. I would define advertising as what are the words and pictures you're putting in front of people to get them to do something, and marketing as the foundational approach that you're going to take to growth that connects the value of the product that you have with the needs that exist in the market. So even that, if people grab onto that, is a very different way of thinking about marketing than I think a lot of people from a technology and product background think about it. And this is one of my hills I'm willing to die on, soapboxes that I will get up on anytime anybody lets me come on their show or lets me get on stage at an industry event, is marketing is so much more than the words and pictures you put in front of people. It is the story that you tell to change perception and behavior in a way that's going to drive growth of your business. And so in order to do that, and I did want to give that kind of, you know, context, but to answer your question more directly of how people, I think, need to go about it and how we do it with our BrandOS process, is you need to triangulate the need that you're solving for the audience you're trying to reach, the value of the product that you're bringing to market, the category convention that you're trying to challenge, or to put it more specifically, how your competitors position themselves in the industry, and therefore, where's the white space? But in the middle of that, because I think a lot of businesses take what they do and say, great, that's our story. Our product is so great because of X, Y, and Z. That's the story that we need to tell to the market. But actually, you need to contrast that with what do you do that other people don't? And that, in my opinion, is how you should be positioning your business.
I love that you touched on the picture element of this, because I'm going to ask you another question around brand. If you go and do a internet search on brand strategy, and even if you go and look up jobs around branding, typically people associate branding with building a logo. And sometimes people consider marketing nothing but advertising. The confusion in what actually a brand is and what marketing actually is, and to your point, what a story is, I think is so cluttered.
Could not agree more. And that's exactly what I was saying of how I think people really need to broaden their definition and their understanding of advertising. It is so much more than just what the brand looks like. And it is so much more than just what the advertising says. So if there was one thing, you know, I always think about with conversations like this, you're going to listen to 30 minutes of us talking or whatever. But the thing that's most important for me is what do people actually do differently? Because you can listen, as you and I do, you can listen to hundreds of podcasts and maybe it sinks in a little bit. But what I am really passionate about and trying to get across in this is like, can I get people to actually think and do things differently in a way that's going to actually help them? And to me, the biggest thing that I would say that you think and do differently about marketing from this conversation or where we're starting it, at least, is reframe and redefine your understanding of marketing from brand and advertising to fundamentally what's the bridge that you need to build as a business between the value proposition of the product or services you offer and the needs that exist in the market, and how is it different from what exists already?
The foundation of innovation is asking the right question. And so the right question that comes to mind when I'm thinking about advertising or somebody who is thinking about marketing, the question I would ask is, what if advertising didn't exist? What would you do? What if you had to market a product without any visual? And those challenges for people often stimulate really interesting and creative ways to market. There's much more to it, especially in today's age where consumers are so empowered to basically just move around and do whatever they want.
I think you could either pretend that your advertising budget went away and what do you do? Or you could go work at a startup where you don't have any budget. But it's kind of a joke, but it's real. I mean, you know, we work with our whole thing is why it's the name of the company called Rival is challenger brands. So businesses that are trying to disrupt, change, or create a new category. And so we work with a lot of growth stage startups, but we also work with big incumbents that, to your point, are trying to innovate through either launching something new, or sometimes we'll come in and kind of take a tiny sliver of a JP Morgan or a Unilever and see if we can help them do things differently on the marketing side. But it's so interesting in the work that we do, but probably more impactfully in the content that we do, because, you know, I host a CMO podcast. We just finished our 70th episode and did like a big insight show on what are the key takeaways, a lot of research, you know, things like that. And it's so interesting to see the difference between what startups do on the marketing side and what incumbents do on the marketing side. Because on the incumbent side, a lot of it is the advertising, these big machines and these big agencies that spend months and so much money coming up with these things that, let's be honest, at the end of the day, a lot of it is, you know, not that great. Whereas startups are like, yeah, I've got, you know, $5,000 this quarter. What are we going to do? But constraints drive creativity. You know, necessity is the mother of invention. You could pick any of the quotes that you want, but it is so interesting to see how startups do it differently. Another way into this conversation is previous to starting Rival, I was CMO of a business called 11FS. So that's how we got connected through a mutual connection who I used to work with. And when I got into the 11FS business and deeper into the fintech scene in London, it was the time of the early challenger banks and neobanks here, Monzo, Revolut, Starling, et cetera. And within kind of the marketing circles, there was a bit of like a badge of honor with a lot of these people where they would say, well, we don't do marketing. You know, our product is so good, product-led growth. You know, we just focus on making a great product. And I will say, even as a marketer, the best marketing is a great product. However, marketing is so much more than just building, if you're doing it right, building a product and then slapping on some advertising to try to bring it to the market. So what these companies did and what marketing was and is at startups that don't have the budget and are all focused on trying to find product market fit, which is where all growth comes from at the end of the day, whether you're a big company or a small company, is can you deliver on people's needs in a new and differentiated way? That's how you grow. But what they did is they focused their marketing resource, limited though it was, maybe it was a person, on how do we bring the customer and an understanding of the customer into the business? Or how do we do something really small that's just trying to get an understanding of like, what are the power users doing with our product? And then bringing that to the product team so that they can innovate. So again, back to my main point of marketing is the bridge between the value of the product and the needs that exist in the market. And that goes both ways. So startups by necessity are thinking about marketing differently. And there's so much that we can all learn from that and just taking a different approach. So I totally agree.
It is a crucial message in there. And again, it's one that I think a lot of people, definitely in the enterprise sectors, don't really think about. For an example, I had a conversation with somebody recently on LinkedIn about journey mapping. I'm amazed at how many organizations are still doing customer journey mapping. Now, at a high level, I understand the need. I understand what the benefit of it is, but I'm under the opinion that they really don't work anymore. And the flip side of this is you have the journey map, you execute on that, you have results. How much of that are you communicating back then to the customer? When these resources are only fueling internal metrics and KPIs, and they don't have any direct relationship back to the customer, then you're really not getting much out of it. It's such a one-way street, it seems, in a lot of cases. This year alone, we've seen when organizations build one-way marketing campaigns that don't include the customer's feedback, how detrimental to that business it could be.
I'm always so interested having conversations like this. And I mentioned it before with the, you could listen to me talk for 30 minutes and maybe it's interesting, but are you actually going to do something differently? But when the conversations around kind of innovation, customer centricity, et cetera, because at the end of the day, that's everything, right? Like that's the whole thing that we're trying to do with any business. And most people aren't stupid. And yet most people aren't able to do that consistently to be able to innovate against customer needs. So like, where's the disconnect? I don't know. If I knew the answer, then obviously, you know, there's a big business idea right there. But when it comes to marketing, speaking to a lot of these kind of challenger CMOs and also kind of big, you know, blue chip CMOs as well, and just trying to synthesize and understand like, what are they doing differently? We recorded this insight show to the podcast last Friday, 3 hours of like over 100 plus interviews of CMOs. What are the biggest things that I've learned from it? And customer centricity is actually number two. And it is really interesting hearing from these CMOs how much more they prioritize listening to, focusing on the customer, spending time in call centers, testing with their paid media campaigns, not just distributing, but actually getting feedback, customer research, et cetera. But the reason that it was number two is because the one that was not what I wouldn't expect, but I think the one that has the biggest opportunity to change things for our audience or maybe your audience was actually what I'm calling having a framework for innovation. And so really, and I'm thinking of a specific example now, So-Young Kang, who's the CMO of EOS Beauty Products. So they do like lip balms and, you know, things like that. Consumer packaged goods, retail e-commerce business. And so the interview with her was actually about a specific kind of case study and success that they had on TikTok. But it came from the fact that she, it's like a Google 10% time or a 70-20-10 framework. But she specifically, no matter how bad the quarter is or how low her budget is, specifically allocates, I forget the percentage, a percentage of the media budget and a percentage of her team's time that she defends at all cost to do 10x ideas, risky things, 9 out of 10 that aren't going to work, but 1 out of 10 that's going to hit a home run. And so I guess all that to say, when it comes to the conversation around like innovation and customer centricity and marketing, like, yes, it's probably like anything that really matters. The answer isn't complicated. It's just you need to do it consistently well over time. And that's hard. You know, I relate it to like going to the gym or diet, or like most of the fundamental truths are not that complicated, but they're hard to do really well. But this is one, this framework for innovation of like set aside some time and money to test things, to take big swings that might miss, to take some risks. I know, again, that can sound a little bit cliche, but I'm telling you, from talking to all these CMOs and seeing what they've done, that is one of the biggest differentiating factors in their ability to really deliver innovation on the marketing side of the house.
And what's interesting about that is you're talking about innovation from a marketing perspective. Typically, an organization would take that innovation and place it somewhere else. We've got an innovation team that is designed to come up with 10x ideas, and we're dedicated to that. But to do it directly in your own team as part of your own strategies, I think it's fabulous.
Yeah. You know, I always find it interesting working with these big organizations where there's a quote innovation team. Like, that should be everybody's job, right? Does that mean that people who aren't in the innovation team aren't innovating? And I know I'm being like a little bit flippant, but also, I don't know, begs the question. I think it's super interesting. So we do a little bit of work in the Middle East as well. And I'm the chair of this marketing committee for the MENA FinTech Association. We had our first event down in Abu Dhabi for Abu Dhabi Finance Week last week. And we had a roundtable of like 12 CMOs from FinTech brands in the industry. And we were having a bit of this conversation. And there's one guy who said what he's done, because he started his CMO role at a FinTech business based out of Tel Aviv, actually, about 6 months ago. The biggest thing for him is trying to shift the perspective of the executive team and the broader company to think of marketing as a research and development function. And I thought that was really interesting, because that's like to your, and what you said of like, oh, well, we'll take this away and give it to the innovation team. It's like, even I don't think of research and development as sitting within marketing, but I really grabbed onto that. And I think maybe that can help some people listening of like, everybody should do innovation, sure. But can you think of and pitch marketing as a research and development function internally? Because at the end of the day, one of the roles of marketing, or one thing that good marketers do, is they make the companies they work for more customer centric. Marketing is the bridge, and they're the ones that sit with the customer, that connect to the customer. So by definition, they, as much as anyone, should have a right and a budget to do research and development as well.
I couldn't agree more with that. That's actually fabulous. If we were to bring all of this together, one of the things that's popping into my mind when we go back and think about why do we think startups are different and what happens between startup land and enterprise world, one of the key factors I think is startups tend to be more agile, and startups tend to be customer hungry. They want to go get those customers. So of course, they're naturally going to produce content or market or innovate new ideas in their products that are going to attract customers. They are so customer focused at that stage, they're doing everything to drive in the business. As organizations grow, they start to get complacent. Oh, we already have customers. We don't have to focus so heavily and be customer centric or innovate for new ideas or come up with this research and development. We already know who our customer base is. We already know what they want. And after a little bit of time, they stop knowing, but they just assume they know. And I think that's where enterprises run into problems. But there is definitely something that you can learn from that startup mentality about staying hungry for constantly going after what the customer wants.
I totally agree. And I always think of, you know, this dynamic challengers versus incumbents, things like that. Back at 11FS, we used to say, you know, growth in a category is a race between challengers getting scale and incumbents getting innovation. And of course, in a 30-minute podcast conversation, you have to level everything up to the top. But I'm also so fascinated by, you know, well, if you pick apart these organizations, like, they're smart, hungry people within big companies. You know, it's never as simple as kind of we have to make it appear when we have conversations like this. So what is it that's different? And I think it's a couple things. I think one, yeah, it's impossible if you work at a 5,000 person company to care as much about the mission that you're on as when you work at a 50 person company. Like, it's just not possible. That's a big piece of it. There's also, of course, the innovator's dilemma of you've got a lot more to risk, therefore you can, or at risk, therefore you can't take the risks that deliver those innovations. But there is also debt that builds up over time. And, you know, everybody talks about technical debt. Marketing debt is the same thing, you know, layer upon layer of, like, this is how we used to do things, and therefore this is how we continue to do them. And I actually think if I had to define, you know, what allows challengers to grow, or the right challengers to grow quickly, it's that they are built for purpose for the world as it exists today, not the world from, I mean, even 2 years ago in the world that we live in right now would be outdated. And I always think about the gap between how you would do things right now and how you did things, or how you would do things right now if you started from scratch, and how you do them right now. That's kind of the growth gap that allows challengers to gain on incumbents. There's just to what you were saying, I'm just going to give another little anecdote from a conversation I had recently. It's with a perfume challenger business out of Toronto, Canada. And I'm fascinated by the perfume industry. I'm not exactly a consumer, but I think the advertising is like, how does this make people buy stuff? It's just like the same like celebrity in a crazy like desert montage video. I'm like, oh man. And by the way, being on the agency world, that's where you make a ton of margin on those ridiculous shoots. But anyway, so this woman was at Unilever for a long time, and now she kind of co-founded this challenger perfume business. And one of the things she said that really stuck with me is she's like, when I was at Unilever, there were 7 layers of approval that I would need to go through just to email a customer. Now, I talk to every customer who buys perfume from us. And so to what you were saying, like, closing the gap, sometimes it is the hunger for sure, but it's also just the reality of the layers of debt and, I don't know, gaps that build between who's making the decisions and what customers actually want.
This is a challenge that I present every single time this topic comes up. Tell me a CEO that can sit down with their customer base on a regular basis. Like, tell me one. Now, at a startup level, I think it happens. Once you get to the enterprise level, I was talking with an airline recently, and I asked the question, does your CEO fly coach and sit next to customers and have conversations with them as they're traveling? No way in the world are they doing that, right? So you take the CEOs of the world. Does the CEO of Coke go visit local grocery stores and just anonymously ask questions? No, they don't. This is the disconnect that we are seeing. And the frustration from me is you claim so heavily to be customer-centric, and yet you, as a leader of the organization, can't take the time to actually have a conversation with a customer. That's a big problem that, as to your point, it just gets lost in the bureaucracy of organizations.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I think that what people always orient themselves to the incentives that they're given. And so there is something at big companies where it's like, for whatever reason, and not all of them, but for whatever reason, that type of behavior of spending time with the customer, and maybe it comes down to, though, that type of time can deliver ideas and opportunities, but doesn't always. And when you're a leader of a big organization or a function like marketing or product, oftentimes you're oriented towards, what do I know is going to give me what I need over the next 90 days? And so I think a big part of it and a big part of what I throw into the conversation and the definition of challenger versus incumbent and what makes them different is an orientation to the long term and how that incentivizes different behavior than an organization to the orientation to the short term.
The other area that I find fascinating is in, we just talked about research, is to look at what your competitors are doing. But beyond that, look at what other businesses in other industries are doing. And that seems to be an area that a lot of people struggle with, even startups. They tend to focus heavily on, well, here are my competitors. Here are what my competitors are doing. I'll replicate that or do something to counter that. As opposed to saying, look, I'm in the healthcare. I run a hospital. But hey, this perfume company just did some really cool ad. I'm going to replicate that ad for healthcare. We don't see that happening.
Yeah, I think two things on that that come to mind for me. So one is, you know, I mentioned this Insight show that we recorded. One of the key takeaways from interviewing 100 plus CMOs was just, I forget the actual way that we framed up the chapter, but it was something around kind of curiosity, constantly expanding your perspective, you know, something like that. And I think you could probably see the same in successful people in any role. And you know, you hear the hero stories of certain entrepreneurs and CEOs and how they approach that. But there definitely is something to not just staying within your box, because if you only listen to people who are doing the same thing as you, you're never going to do anything differently. And so there definitely is something to just kind of like learning for the sake of learning. And at the end of the day, you know, creativity, innovation, I'm not sure how you define the difference between the two, but they certainly sit together. If creativity is connecting things in a way that they haven't been done before, then by definition, you need to think differently. And a good way to think differently is to broaden your perspective on how other things are done outside of just what you do. The other thing that came to mind for me, and it's probably tangentially relevant, but I'm just trying to think of, again, like actionable things for people listening. One of the things I heard recently talking to a startup business, and they were a fintech business as well, actually payments, but they wanted to appear as a luxury brand. And so what their CMO, kind of the gut check that he would use with the ideas that his team would bring him or his agency, was not, you know, would JP Morgan Private Banking or Coutts here in the UK you do something like this? It's would Chanel do something like this? And I really like that, because it's like, yeah, Chanel wouldn't run an ad campaign on how you move money, but does it feel like Chanel when you do it? And so I think there is something, you know, maybe something people could do differently is like, what's the brand that you aspire to be outside of your category that defines that feeling and that emotion in a way that we all understand, like Chanel does? And maybe throw that out there to yourself or your team or, you know, your leadership team, if you're a marketer, and just be like, hey, could we be a little bit more like this? And I think even just that, even just stepping outside of your box for a minute, like already for me, if I was the CMO of a fintech company, a luxury fintech company, I'm like, oh, wait, what would Chanel do? I think that that's super interesting.
Yeah. In the style of, I would like to do marketing in the style of fill in the blank. I think that's a really interesting way of looking at that. Just before we wrap it up, one other area that I'd like to talk about is culture, you know, cultural differences, challenges. I find it fascinating as we look across the world right now with all of the various challenges that we are faced with. But I think culturally, especially as we become more digital and we're online, we're recording a podcast online. We've never met in person, but we've had calls and we've talked together. The social and the cultural elements of marketing is also, I think, drastically shifting.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. So first of all, and obviously this has gotten, I'm sure this has been covered already, but just kind of how quickly we went back to the way things had been done before. You know, if you remember 3 years ago, I was like, we're never going to go to in-person events and we'll never need to have another in-person. Like, man, we are human beings at the end of the day. And there is still no, until the metaverse finally makes it here, there is still no replacement for actually being in person. Video is the closest that we have. This is better than if we were just on a call, which would be better if we were just on an email, which would be better than if we were just writing each other a letter. But there is still no replacement for it. And at the end of the day, you know, culture is the connective tissue between what you want to do and how the people around you actually get there. Because the things that are most effective and the things that are most fun are not the ones that are spelled out on a slide or that have to get micromanaged all the time. So I think marketing, probably much like any other function, or, you know, for me, I'm a marketer, but I'm also a co-founder and CEO of a business. And even though we're only 20 people, well, especially because we're 20 people, we have the luxury of our culture is just who we are. We haven't needed to have the like, okay, let's go through the 6-month process of trying to define our values and stuff like that. We'll get there if we scale. But that's it at the end of the day. And so I think you cannot underestimate the importance of that for the output and also the happiness of anybody on any team, but certainly marketing.
And are you sharing that same philosophy with your customers in terms of trying to unlock or better understand what their internal cultures are to enjoy and thrive in the ways that you are as well?
We do it through the door of the brand and growth strategy that I mentioned at the beginning. So for example, we did a brand positioning engagement for a new bank that's being built in South Africa. And that, of course, is going to inform what the brand actually looks like in terms of advertising and look and feel and all that stuff. But it also defined the, you know, or helped to shape the product roadmap of what they wanted to build out and the different features and what they wanted to deliver. And also the cultural values internally, because if what we get to in our brand OS process, our point of difference, our brand platform is who we say we are, then that needs to be delivered externally and internally. So I think that the role of brand, like I said before, and going all the way back to the beginning, the big thing for me is like marketing is not advertising. Advertising and distribution is one piece of it. But marketing at the end of the day for me is how do you build the bridge between the value of who you are and what you deliver and the needs that exist in the market. And that needs to be much more holistic.
It's a great way to summarize it and bring it all together. I definitely agree. I think an individual company's culture helps define what their brand is. The messaging and the voice that is coming out of your company has to start from the culture. That has to be an integral part of what your brand is all about. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it so much. It was a great conversation.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Chris.
And of course, thanks to all of you who are listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a review. Your feedback helps us improve and grow. And if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for the show, you can connect with us throughout social media and online at Chris Hood Show. And please share this episode with your friends, family, colleagues, or anyone else looking to grow their business and start their own digital evolution. Until next week, take care and stay connected.